You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Construction of the Freedom Tower, now simply called One World Trade Center, began in 2006, and it's finally almost close to completion. Since 2005, Scott Rabb has written a series of stories for Esquire on the political squabbles, boondoggles, and corruption that have made construction far more than the classic New York grind. And in his latest piece called A Target in Perpetuity, the eighth installment in his series, he turns to the problem of security. It's in the magazine's current issue, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Rabb back to our show today. Hello.
How are you?
So is there a firm date for when One World Trade will open?
A firm date? There has never been a firm date for anything to open on those 16 acres. No, late next year.
And is there still a lot of additional construction on the site?
Well, almost everything is internal and mechanical at this point, but it's also a matter of getting the vehicle security center ready to admit the trucks necessary to bring in the office equipment and supplies to have tenants actually do business there.
Is there a grand plan now for how security will be managed at the site?
Nobody knows the answer to that, which means no. There was an agreement between the Port Authority, which owns the property, and the New York Police Department. That is anybody's guess at this point.
Well, New York City Police Department will have primary control over security, but since it is Port Authority property, why aren't the Port Authority police going to handle it?
The agreement that was worked out in 2008 between the Port Authority, then Executive Director Chris Ward, and the city gave the NYPD primary jurisdiction over the World Trade Center.
Well, GOP mayoral candidate Joe Loda said that Port Authority police are nothing more than mall cops. Is that behind this thinking?
Well, there are two extremes. One is that kind of thinking. The other is the Port Authority, or the PAPD, essentially justifying its primacy by invoking the memory of the 37 PAPD officers who lost their lives on 9/11. Neither represents a cogent approach to security.
So does the PAPD resent the fact that that deal was made?
Yeah, one of the parties involved in the deal characterized the procedure as putting his hand into a effing blender. So it has been a pitched battle for many years now. Who is going to patrol? Who's going to be responsible for security at the World Trade Center?
And I guess we have no idea how large the NYPD presence at the center will be.
The agreement struck in 2008 called for a precinct that would have been the largest in New York, 600 officers all trained in anti-terrorism.
For one building?
No, for the 16-acre site.
Well, but still, that's 16 acres is not – I mean, it's large, but this is pretty much one building, and then the Memorial Museum?
Well, 8 acres of the 16 are devoted to the Memorial Plaza, the museum that is yet to open. But that agreement in 2008 gave the Port Authority jurisdiction over the train station, which may open in 2015 or 2016, and over One World Trade Center inside the building.
Now, why is it taking so long for the train station to open?
This is the Calatrava. It's
beautiful, but then everybody said it was going to be the most beautiful train station in the world, and then they kept on cutting back on it.
Well, the wings that were supposed to open, there was always a question as to whether they would actually strike one of the towers yet to be built. And the entire thing, in terms of a sculptural gesture, was always beautiful, and I think it will be even after the so-called value engineering. The problem is it's been a cash cow for the New Jersey side of the Port Authority. We are talking about originally $2.2 billion train station that will now come in somewhere around $4 billion a train station.
And that's under the purview of the New Jersey side of
Port Authority? It's part of the trade-off. For something to get done, the Port Authority is a supra-governmental agency, supposedly half the commissioners from New York, half from New Jersey, and supposedly insulated from politics. But the truth of the matter is, going back to the original World Trade Center, there is always a quid pro quo involved to get the New Jersey commissioners to go along.
There's also a Lower Manhattan Security Initiative, yes, which will be administered by the NYPD.
Well, it's entirely unclear at this point how the pieces are going to fit together in terms of securing that site and protecting it from – and the part that's really – it's hard to assert comfortably, but almost impossible to argue, someone is going to attack, successfully or not, is going to attempt to attack the World Trade Center.
You're saying that, and that's the title of your piece, but that that actually was inspired by CNN's national security analyst Peter Bergen. He said, they've attacked it twice, and it seems a target in perpetuity. Somebody will try something.
You
believe that?
I do, and Peter Bergen's certainly not the only either terrorism expert or law enforcement vet who has expressed exactly those sentiments.
And the they, do we have any idea who the they is?
Who knew who they were at the Boston Marathon until it became clear who they were? We have no idea at this point.
Well, then there is the other side of this. I mentioned the Lower Manhattan Security Initiative, which is going to have cameras all over the place, kind of like what's happening in London. And some people are concerned that, and this is across the political spectrum, that the United States is trading too much liberty in the name of security.
I think you can make a persuasive argument, especially given what we've heard about it. And this all really does flow from 9/11, 2001. Whether it's the cameras, the surveillance everywhere, whether it's the NSA tapped into our conversations online or via the telephone.
You know, there are lots of people listening to us talk right now.
I hope so. But the problem is, how do you strike a balance? You know, if there is a successful attack, regardless of it's at the World Trade Center or anywhere else, there are always going to be fingers pointed at whatever governmental agencies in charge, saying you didn't do enough. Meanwhile, there are plenty of people who are always going to say this is too much.
I'm talking with Scott Raab, RAAB, the eighth installment of a series he's been doing in Esquire about the Freedom Tower, now called One World Trade Center, is in the current issue of Esquire magazine, A Target in Perpetuity is its title. Design and several rounds of redesign of the Freedom Tower got a lot of attention. Were David Child's redesigns all about the security angle?
It depends on who you talk to. The public story is that, yes, the NYPD stepped in back in 2004, 2005 to express its concern that the building was going to be sited way too close to West Street, to the West Side Highway, and that they were worried about the open base and the possibility of vulnerability to a truck bomb. So the redesign there was in answer to security problems.
Well, hadn't Daniel Lipskin addressed the issue of security in his original winning design?
No, the Lipskin master plan was really a series of sculptural gestures. In no way was Lipskin ever going to be the architect who brought home any of those buildings, although he did want to be part of designing One World Trade.
What about the other architects who entered the competition? Had any of them taken security seriously into their designs?
No, and they weren't asked to. It was always a beauty contest and nothing more.
Yesterday, urban anthropologist Elizabeth Greenspan was here to discuss the politics of rebuilding at Ground Zero. She's particularly interested in the idea of ownership of the site. There's the Port Authority's literal ownership, and then developer Larry Silverstein's long-term lease, and the less tangible sense of ownership many others have. What roles have private stakeholders like Silverstein had in developing security measures?
Well, each of the so-called stakeholders, I think, it has been a victim of his or her own tunnel vision. I mean, years were spent simply debating the placement of the names on the parapets around the memorial fountains. So for the developer, for someone like Larry Silverstein, security is always going to be an issue, but there's very little he can do in terms of exerting control over security. So it's always, I think, been left to the NYPD and the Port Authority to sort out that issue. And it's fraught with politics at the state level between Governors Christie and Cuomo, Mayor Mike Bloomberg. I mean, these are battles that are really played out in Albany and in Trenton, not just in Lower Manhattan.
Many business people would say that open exchange, free trade are especially important for conducting robust business. Have any business leaders expressed concerns that security might interfere with the normal conduct of business?
I have not heard those concerns expressed, but it's a third rail issue. Condé Nast has signed a lease at One World Trade Center. Almost half the building, 1.2 million square feet or so. They'll be bringing hundreds and hundreds of employees down to work there. There are all kinds of retailers who are going to be moving into destination retail in the train station, other parts of the 16 acres around the site. I think everyone is concerned. Everyone's concerned about security. Very difficult to talk about publicly.
Who was the main force behind the fears over security? Well, I mean, how far back does that go?
The NYPD has always felt closed out of the site. I mean, it's a Vatican type of situation. We're talking about 16 acres in Lower Manhattan that are in no way owned by the city of New York. They are owned by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Their police force, 1,800 officers, is the 41st largest police force in the country. They own that property. They were governed. The PA was governed by a man named Austin Tobin, kind of a Robert Moses type of figure. They got into the real estate business by seizing those 16 acres back in the 60s and building the Twin Towers along with the other buildings on the site. And they have clung to that acreage for all they're worth. They don't answer to New York City's zoning laws, and that was a big issue after the towers fell. And these things remain kind of a hot-button issue. The owner of the site, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, considers it the jewel in their crown. And yet they themselves, years ago, said they would not ask their own employees to return to work at One World Trade Center.
Well, when the original World Trade Center buildings were erected, people were concerned about the fact that the through streets had were no longer available for traffic flow. There were all sorts of other things. It was set above street level, had a sort of 60s sterile modernist feel. How do you think the combination of new design, memorial, and security is going to feel at the new site?
Based on what's there now, and I still visit with some regularity, the Memorial Plaza is, I think, wonderful and really is integrated in the sense of an urban park. It's impossible to know at this point in terms of pedestrian traffic. I mean, the old World Trade Center was built around the super block construct that really did close off the urban grid down there.
And it didn't feel like New York.
No.
In fact, that whole thing, Battery Park City, across the whatever that is now, the West Side Highway, that really feels like something from Dallas rather than New York.
It's interesting because that was the Hudson River. That's all built on landfill that was excavated in order to erect the Twin Towers and the other buildings at the site. It's really anyone's guess at this point. The upside is that downtown around that World Trade Center organically has become a vibrant and thriving neighborhood. Without any of the politics involved, without any of these backstory, endless grinding issues about rebuilding the site, the neighborhood itself has really come alive.
So somebody wants to go to One World Trade. Are security measures going to be obvious to a visitor? Are they going to be tighter than they are in other city buildings?
In terms of being able to drive very close to the site or get a cab very close to the site, no, they'll be the black cars, the New York tradition of the 1% being able to step outside of the building and right into a limousine. That will be preserved.
But cars, in fact, a listener has written in, Barbara from Great Neck, asked whether anybody suggested just banning cars from the area since that would be the most obvious way to bring in a bomb.
I think that will be the effect, that there will be nothing but pedestrian traffic down there. And while there's aesthetic concerns about the entry and egress points for any vehicle, the best case scenario is a pedestrian friendly, fairly warm environment that the aesthetic purists are still going to find plenty to object to.
Well, right now we live in a world where we're used to taking off our shoes when we go to the airport. We're used to having people look in our bags, having to take off our belts in some cases. So I guess people are inured to what they're going to be facing at One World Trade.
To some degree, I think that's true for most people.
I wonder what it's going to be like to work at The New Yorker and have to do that every day.
Oh, it's going to be fascinating. It's already great to read the architecture critics, the editorial board, community board one down there. The neighborhood, people live in the neighborhood. People who criticize architecture are going to find plenty to get heated up about. But you're right. I mean, given the reality of the world we live in now, it's going to be some hybrid of what we knew and what we hope to know as a neighborhood.
Scott Rabb's eighth installment of a series he's been doing on the World Trade Center. This one, A Target in Perpetuity, is in the current issue of Esquire magazine. We'll take a little break and we'll come back with more. Stay with us. Later on in this hour, multiple Grammy Award-winning banjo player Bela Fleck performs music from his latest CD live in our studio. Plus, find out how symmetry is so important to understanding the physics behind the unseen order of the universe. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast.
WNYC receives support from International School of Brooklyn, a nursery through 8th grade international baccalaureate and French and Spanish language immersion school, accepting applications for 2014 to 2015 beginning in September. Admission info and more at isbrooklyn.org. Incredible India, offering travel experiences in every season and diverse climates, from majestic Himalayan heights to tropic rainforests. More information available at incredibleindia.org or 800-953-9399. WNYC gratefully acknowledges the backing of our corporate underwriters and would like to add your business to our list of diverse supporters. To become a WNYC underwriter, call Senior Director Lori Pracher at 646-829-4477.
This August and September, the Green Space is celebrating August Wilson's American Century Cycle with the first ever live recorded readings of all 10 plays with a terrific cast of actors and directors. I'm Ruben Santiago Hudson, Artistic Director, inviting you to share in this historic series online through live video webcasts. You can find the schedule and watch at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.
We're back with Scott Rabb, whose latest article in a series about the World Trade Center rebuild is called A Target in Perpetuity. It's in the current issue of Esquire magazine. There have been a lot of reports on our country's use of drones and NSA spying around the world. Do you know if any special high-tech security is being planned for use at the World Trade Center?
I do not know. One of the tough things about reporting this particular aspect of the rebuilding is that nobody wants to talk even off the record about things like that.
But you do mention in your article that Commissioner Ray Kelly said the NYPD could, we're quoting, could, if necessary, blow an airplane out of the sky.
This is the commissioner told 60 Minutes that. And then Mayor Bloomberg followed up by saying, you know, you don't know and you won't know what capacity the NYPD has.
Well, I think back to 9/11, and whether we had that capacity or not, it was unlikely that the NYPD would have blown an airliner out of the sky, passenger airliner.
It's stunning to realize that the NYPD, with 50,000 employees, is larger than the FBI. And that part of their reach is global, and that part of their, I think it's strategy, tactically, is to frighten anyone out of the notion that they'll ever be able to successfully attack New York City again by any means. I think that's just part of the strategy there.
Last April, you wrote, and I'm quoting, that the Port Authority's stewardship of Ground Zero in substance and as symbol has been a bumbling puppet show in an obscene gold rush. You call the authority and the politicians who run it pigs. Boy, you minced words. What kind of problems have you been seeing over the years?
I mean, from the beginning, and then when we go back to 9/11, 2001, nobody knew Mike Bloomberg was going to succeed Rudy Giuliani. Everyone thought Mark Green was going to win the mayoralty. And Giuliani attempted and failed to win a third term based entirely on the aftermath of 9/11. He and George Pataki made sure that the spoils, meaning everyone knew that billions and billions of dollars would be flowing into that site in order to rebuild it. And they created the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. The Port Authority, which had become a patronage pit and had been forced to divest itself of that property, which is how Larry Silverstein, you know, came to be the leaseholder.
Bad timing for the Port Authority.
Absurd timing. When you think about it, it couldn't have been worse. That was merely 7-8 weeks before 9/11 that Larry Silverstein signed the lease. It was bad timing for everyone, but it was excellent timing for the politicians. And as heartless as it sounds, the Port Authority has simply been reduced to a proxy, a Punch and Judy show for politicians to bash each other while the money has flowed in and out of that site.
Well, if rebuilding was supposed to symbolize the resilience of New Yorkers and Americans, do you think that there's anything symbolic or meaningful in the combination of corruption and security concerns? So we're calling this the Freedom Tower. You could see a little irony in the fact that there's going to be an awful lot of security applied.
I think in many ways it's a wonderful, apt – I'm not being the least bit snide here. I think it's a totally accurate mirror of the forces that built – I mean, I love capitalism. I love New York City. But there was never any question that this was going to come to symbolize everything about the forces that built this country and this city, which include venality, greed, the hunger for power, the quenchless thirst for money. All those things are rebuilding the World Trade Center.
And then a number of governors have seen it also as part of their campaigns for presidency.
George Pataki had a little model of the Freedom Tower built in a suitcase so he could travel from Iowa to New Hampshire, hoping to raise enough money to launch a bid for the White House. From the beginning, whether it's Rudy Giuliani, whether it's George Pataki, this has been a boon. In many ways, the best day of Rudy Giuliani's political career was 9/11.
Well, and he became the butt of jokes because he couldn't make a statement without somehow invoking 9/11.
Well, this really is one of the things I think that the most dire legacy of 9/11. I mean, clearly, you know, nearly 3,000 people died at Ground Zero in New York, and that horror really is unspeakable. But what's followed in its wake in terms of the politicians milking endless fear and really America from the media to the populace, our willingness to roll over and just kind of bask in the thought that Big Brother will take care of us, that's terrifying.
You write scathingly of Governors Chris Christie and Andrew Cuomo. I'm quoting, "To men like Cuomo and Christie, insanely ambitious politicians whose eyes are forever on the next prize, the PA, including Ground Zero, is little more than a means to a discrete end, the acquisition of more power." What have they done specifically?
Well, the agreement that was reached for securing the site between the NYPD and the Port Authority was signed by Police Commissioner Ray Kelly and then Executive Director of the Port Authority, Chris Ward. It was during a speech Chris Christie made in front of the Port Authority Police Union, having secured their endorsement for his reelection, when he announced, "No other agency, as long as I'm in office, will patrol those 16 acres except for the Port Authority." That's just one example of a public
figure. But that's not true.
We don't know whether it's true.
Well, you said earlier that the NYPD has been given jurisdiction.
That security agreement, depending on who you talk to, no longer applies. It's being renegotiated or not being renegotiated at all. Nobody knows now, de facto, who is going to have jurisdiction. Nobody knows.
Well, you say that both Christie and Cuomo are partners, I'm quoting again, in the business of what's in it for me, but that Mayor Bloomberg and Port Authority Executive Director Chris Ward have presented obstacles to that agenda. What have Bloomberg and Ward done?
Everything that Chris Ward did as executive director, including opening the Memorial Plaza on the 10th anniversary, everything that Mike Bloomberg has done in terms of heading the effort to open the memorial and the museum, I think has been to the good of the site. The obstacles they represent were purely in terms of leverage and power. Andrew Cuomo got rid of Chris Ward as executive director as soon as he could, and both those governors have been waiting out Mike Bloomberg. They brought construction on the museum underneath the Memorial Plaza to a halt in order to wait until Mike Bloomberg was no longer in office, could no longer take credit for having done the work that he's done to get the memorial and museum open.
Was Chris Ward's crime that he wasn't political?
I think part of it, not only wasn't he political, but he was getting public credit. I certainly gave him credit in other chapters I've written for Esquire about it. But everyone outside of Albany and Trenton seems to agree that Chris Ward was the best thing to ever happen to the Port Authority and those 16 acres.
And then we have security concerns, legitimate or not, spilling out beyond the area of the site. I'm reminded of a furor over the Islamic Cultural Center that was two blocks away from the World Trade Center site. To what extent did people justify their concerns about Park 51 by invoking the topic of security.
Well, this was the Ground Zero mosque. This was an opportunity for everyone on the right, on the political right, to talk about the jihadi triumph that such a thing would represent. It was an opportunity for Mike Bloomberg to invoke that, oh, by the way, there actually is government protection of religious observance. So there was a lot of public posturing around what amounted to something very, very trivial.
Does the NYPD have a position on this?
I don't think
security concerns.
I think at this point, nobody is talking publicly on either the Port Authority or the NYPD sides about how this will be. The issue of jurisdiction is not resolved, and nobody's saying anything, including, by the way, the newspapers. The local newspapers have ignored this completely.
Well, the NYPD has provoked controversy by profiling Muslims and spying on Arab and Muslim organizations. So maybe this will offer them a convenient place to start.
You know, it's interesting. You want, if you have someone, or you yourself are working down at Ground Zero, the question of who would you want to protect you, the Port Authority police or the NYPD, is one question. The other larger question is about where is the civilian control? I mean, we have no civilian review board in New York City, and it is not to cast aspersions on the NYPD or the PAPD to say, where is the civilian control, whether it's surveillance, whether it's blowing airplanes out of the sky? Who's in charge here? What is the next mayor going to do? Why isn't anyone talking about this?
You refer to so-called terrorism experts. Do you think that there are people offering advice on security who just don't know what they're talking about or who have ulterior motives?
Ulterior motives, I would say you could pretty much reduce to showing up on TV. But in terms of terrorist experts, it's like life coaches. What exactly are the qualifications there? And I don't think anyone knows.
But I guess it's former generals and ex-cops.
There are those guys. There are plenty of journalists. There are people who teach, you know, in different university programs. But there is no agreed upon set of criteria to designate someone as a security expert, terrorism expert, and they come out. They're like roaches. They're everywhere.
But you mentioned earlier that almost everyone agrees that the World Trade Center site will be a target sometime in the future. Why that? I mean, after 9/11, Al-Qaeda went to London to create, and bombed a subway train station. They did the same thing in Madrid.
Yes.
There's still the White House. There's the Statue of Liberty. There's the Brooklyn Bridge. There are things all over the country that might also be attractive to to a terrorist.
Yes.
So why do we assume that it's going to be the World Trade Center?
Well, same reason Willie Sutton robbed banks. You know, that's where the money is, and that's where it has been suggested. People I've talked to never will be named that this is where the headlines are. That this is where there's a scenario toward the end of the Esquire story in the current issue where you could have a couple of people buying hunting rifles in upstate New York, buying shells, and driving by the memorial where people are standing in line unprotected on public streets. And you could we have seen, in essence, the outsourcing of terrorism from what we first knew as Al-Qaeda to a fractured assemblage of groups everywhere in the globe. But New York City is still the capital of the universe in terms of this kind of thing.
Except for Chris Ward, do you see any other people who have acted commendably in this story?
I think almost everyone has acted commendably in terms of congruence with their role. I think the Port Authority is a very, very difficult institution that does not belong in the real estate business. But there are plenty of people at the Port Authority of goodwill and who are competent. I think institutionally, whether it's a real estate developer Larry Silverstein, architect David Childs, Michael Arad, who designed the memorial, there are plenty of people to be commended. But as with planes landing safely, I'm not going to necessarily write too much about the good stuff that happens down there.
This is the eighth installment of the series.
I believe it's the ninth.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. But who's counting?
So how many more do you think there'll be?
I think at this point it depends on how things play out. heaven knows I would like to spend at least 3 or 4 of my remaining years on Earth writing a definitive book about it, but we'll see if that happens.
Scott Rabb's 8th or 9th installment in his series on the construction on the World Trade Center site is in the current issue of Esquire. It's called A Target in Perpetuity. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
My pleasure. Thank you.